Welcome to the Nourish Me podcast. I'm Joanne Pavin, your host. And if you found yourself here, you're ready to take actionable steps to optimize your health and live a more balanced, productive, and creative life. In our tech-driven world, we need a reminder to slow down, stop the scroll, and take digital breaks. I'm here to inspire you to step away from your screen, to nourish yourself through nature and connection to others, to follow a new algorithm, the rhythm of real life. So let's get started. Hello, my friends. It's Joanne Pavin, your host of the Nourish Me podcast. I'm so grateful you're here. It's taken me a little while to get this episode out as it's summer. And you know as well as I do, the summer is filled with fun events, parties, family activities. And frankly, I've been swallowed up by outdoor fun and gardening, which is the point of the podcast, right? To get out from behind your screen and away from devices into nature. So we know I've been taking my advice. One thing I love to do in the summer is read outdoors. I love to read in the sun or in the evening breeze. I have a beautiful view of these large blue spruce pines and just escape into a really good book. And this summer I happened to read a moving and powerful memoir by a novelist who happens to be a fellow high school alum. I've also had the joy of following her work and writing for some years now. The book is called Wildfire, and I had been anticipating reading it since its release in the spring. I was finally able to dive into it, and that dive was emotional, transformational, and enlightening, to say the least. The author of Wildfire is Nicole Salick Anderson, and she happens to be my guest today. I am so honored that she wanted to come on to share her work and her message. Her message is incredibly impactful in light of the tragic Maui fires. A moment of silence for those affected. You'll want to stick around through the whole episode to hear her story and her thoughts on the current situation in Maui. And you'll also want to hear about an opportunity to meet her in person at an upcoming event I have in the Chicagoland area at the end of September. So a little more about Nicole. She is a computer science graduate from Purdue University and former CTO for a small Silicon Valley startup, turned novelist, speaker, and essayist. Her writing ranges from AI and Zen to tiny house living, to direct democracy, to the loneliness of modern parenting, which caught my eye a few years ago, which is featured as a top 20 story on Medium. She is the author of four novels and a memoir. And in August of 2020, Nicole and her family lost their home, pets, and all their belongings to the CZU lightning wildfire in Northern California. Many of her essays since that pivotal event have focused on rebuilding a life from ashes, as well as the environmental and societal impacts of housing in an age of climate disaster. Her memoir, Wildfire, Losing Everything, Gaining the World, shares this journey with readers. Wildfire is a story of rage and despair, guilt and hope in the face of an environmental disaster. It is about the sacrifices it takes to be a steward rather than an owner of this beautiful planet we call home. You can find all of Nicole's books on Amazon, Audible, and her website, which will be in the show notes, NicoleSalickAnderson.com, and make sure you follow her at NSalickAnderson on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Medium. You can also follow her wildfire journey and tiny home living on her Substack, A Bedroom with the Bees. Without further ado, let me introduce you to Nicole Salick Anderson, author of Wildfire, Losing Everything, Gaining the World.
Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you, Joanne.
Thanks for being here today. This is Nicole Salek Anderson. She is the author of 7 books, but to me, most important at this point in time is her book, Wildfire. Today, we're going to discuss Wildfire and its impactful message in light of the Maui fires, but also get into the messaging behind connecting to the earth through the tragic fires that she went through in 2020. But I want to bring the listeners up to speed. They know your background from the intro. Now, this is coming up on your 3rd anniversary of the fires from 2020. And yes. I just want to check in with you. I want to have you tell me how you're feeling at this point, coming up on this 3rd year of losing everything.
Yeah. You know, each year that we celebrate the anniversary or have a remembrance, different things come up each time, you know, but this time I'm really grateful to have shelter, to have put behind us most of the, you know, insurance and permitting and all of the things that come with it that, you know, yeah, last year were, I was in the middle of all that. Now I can breathe and look back. And so, you know, where I am today is maybe a little more wistful even than a year ago, because there's more space to remember what was lost, but also to give thanks for what was found, things that never would have happened had that wildfire not taken our neighborhood. So it's like a mixture of longing and also excitement, because I, you know, we're on a new path now and I'm not sure where it's going.
Right. And you lived in this area for 13 years,
yes.
And you had evacuated before. So this time, you know, you had said in the book, I'll be back, right? Can you shed some light on that? Because it was really powerful to think like, well, I'm just going to close the door and I'll be right back tomorrow.
Or, right.
You know, next day.
Yeah. You know, living in California, which we didn't realize when we moved there in 2007, you know, that wildfires are a part of that state. But what's different is that prior to, I want to say, the fire that took Paradise in 2018, when you were evacuated, you often came back. They were able to go in and hold the line. Like, you know, so right off the bat in 2008, we were evacuated that very first summer. Of course, that was a little scary. And to be terribly honest, we bought, let's back up again, because California also has a very interesting real estate situation. So, you know, and that actually is a lot like what Maui is going through too. They're very similar. I'm in Santa Cruz, California, very hot real estate market. And we lived in a shack that we were incredibly house poor for. Like, it was like we spent everything we could, and it was a really hard amount of time. So that first summer when we evacuated, we're like, burn down the house. Like, I mean, like, we're like, can we put out a sign that says, don't save the house, like save the trees, you know, like save,
yeah.
We've already fallen in love with these trees. That's why we bought the land. The trees drew us in, you know, huge, beautiful 200-foot redwoods and Douglas firs and twisted madrones. And it was a very magical forest. So we were like, if there was a way to just let the house go, but keep everything else alive, wouldn't that be great? 2 days later, we're back. Happened again, a couple, you know, I don't know. It's just California. It happened again. You know, we evacuated, stayed in a hotel down by the sea. 2 days later, we're back. So this time I felt the same way because that was the habit, but it wasn't the same at all than the other 2 times. I want to say I should have known better, but it was sort of like between the, well, wait, no, the worst can't happen. It never happens. They always stop it over there. They don't let it come in. And this time they let it come in. They stood down and it burned 900 homes. It burned my entire neighborhood. It burned, it almost took a town called Boulder Creek at the bottom of the mountain, it and Ben Lomond. And that was what was new. What was new was that they let it burn. You know, and there are many different reasons why they made that choice, but that was the end result. So that's what made it
right.
Different.
And you do get into that in the book, which is, I, you know, everybody will find this book and read it after this, because it is so meaningful and so powerful on so many levels and so many life lessons. But what can you tell us, what started the fire? I've read a little bit about it, but explain to us about how the fire started.
So there on August 16th, early in the morning. So we're talking midnight. It started on August 15th and rolled into the early mornings because I was outside at 2 a.m. watching it. A lightning fire came through, and a very unusual, very strange lightning fire came through California. It actually started, as we just looked up, 650 fires. So to be fair, they let it burn. They basically they're moving CAL FIRES, moving forces, and all over a state. Not quite prepared to have 650 wildfires start at once. And it was from the dry lightning. There was little to no rain with it, but there was thunder and lightning. And I was outside that morning. I thought it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen because you don't get thunder and lightning very often in California for good reason. But I, as a Midwestern girl, didn't know this. And I thought, oh, I just went 13 years without seeing thunder and lightning here. I'm going to go out on the back porch and watch this because who knows when it will happen again. So it was a very beautiful lightning storm, but when we woke the next morning, we had no power and it was smoking. Everything was covered in smoke. And so we drove down to town and talked to the fire department, and they said a couple fires had started in the woods, miles from our house, 10 miles, 15 miles. You'll be fine. We've got it under control. And that was the 16th later in that day. And we were supposed to go to take my elder son. My husband and I were leaving the next morning, take my elder son to college back for his senior year in Portland. My younger son, who was 19 at the time, was supposed to stay home with all the animals. We had two goats, a cat, two dogs, and a bunch of chickens. And I woke up that morning and I was like, I'm not going with you, to my husband. I'm like, this, it's even smokier. They still have said it's far away. Like if you get online or you go find the cell phone tower and you go park next to it and check your phone, they say it's okay. So it's okay, but I'm not leaving my son. I'm not going to go. And so my husband left with the big car and went away with my eldest son, and my younger son and I were left alone that night. And so that first night we were together fine. And I do write about that. This is the night that's actually really on my mind today, actually, is not the night that I was evacuated, but the night before I was evacuated, and my husband is gone, and my younger son went into town to visit some friends, and I was all alone in the house and no power. And it's really smoky, really, really smoky. And it's the strangest thing. You have to shut your windows because you don't want to destroy your furniture and you don't want to destroy all of that. But it didn't matter. It looked like a bar in the 80s inside my house back in the day when they let you smoke. Remember those? I guess you and I didn't go to the bars in the 80s. We're not that old. But regardless, you know what I'm talking about. Before they, got rid of it. This is like my table looks like. And I've got this instinct to start taking pictures. Like, so it's the night before I evacuate, but I'm taking pictures. And it looks like I look at those pictures now of my dining room, and it does. There's a haze, like a poker table haze. So I suddenly feel incredibly sad, and so I grab a bottle of wine and I grab my acoustic bass because I have no electric. I played the bass back then, and I went and sat underneath my best friend's is was a tree named Doug. Big Doug is his name. He's a Doug fir. He was about 250 feet tall, and he was over our deck off of my master bedroom, and I basically played every song I knew and sang underneath him for that whole night until I didn't have anything left to sing. And I was even like, okay, I think that's G, C, and D. Aren't all rock and roll songs G, C, and D? I was even like, I think I know that song. If I could sing it, if I knew the words, I was trying to figure it. And then I went to bed. And the next day the power did come on, but that night, and they said everything was fine. And so when I went to bed that night, there was actually something sent out on Facebook saying, "You're all fine, go to bed, don't worry." But it got smokier again. So that's what I'm saying. It's like 3 days of this smoke and smoke and the heat. And so I
You
went to bed
said
that night, and that I woke up in the middle of the night to a voice that said, "Get up now." And I was about an hour and a half late, but something changed in the middle of the night, and the winds had turned, and the fire was coming our way, and we had to evacuate.
And you just said you got that message, right? The message, like spirit, whatever you want to call it, that woke you. And as women, we're more
connected to that, right? You mentioned like how if your husband was left in the house, that he might, he might not be here
Would have
because he would have.
slept in. He would have, the sheriff would have been knocking on his door. And to be fair, I will give the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department kudos. Only one person died in all of this. They evacuated everyone. So they did a very, very good job. So my husband would have been the one, though, that he'd be like, they'd be knocking on his door, like, you kind of got to go. Whereas I heard it and told my son, we have to go. And we went at like 2 in the morning, and it was really, really, really bad by that point. There was, flaming leaves and debris coming down from the sky. The porch was covered in ash. It was really happening.
I'm taking a moment because I'm following your visual, and I couldn't even imagine being in that. So anyway, the strength that you've gained just from having that life experience which you get into in the book is incredible, and such an important virtue then to share after this whole experience. But I want to get into the nature, because you've come from the tech, right? Nicole was telling me how she told her boys they could get a computer, but they had to build it themselves. So being from the tech world, right, where it's all just this analytical binary, everything is coding and everything is sort of in its box, right? It is a formula. But then you come into this beautiful place where you have your children and you leave the tech world and you're in this mountainside and you connect into the depth of the earth. And I know that you've probably always been connected to the earth because you talk about living in the Midwest and growing up and listening, and you grew up on a lake.
I grew up on a lake.
So you have that connection to nature already. But tell us about the experience in the mountain for those years that you spent connecting, and you started growing your own food, and you got your animals, and you started naming your trees, and you started listening to the fairies, and you really immersed yourself in the depth of that place. So can you kind of bring us from how you went from tech into this wonderful natural habitat and what it taught you?
Well, I'm glad that you bring up the children part, because I do think having children definitely changes you in the way that you become more aware, maybe. I mean, I don't know, but I did, more aware of all the surroundings. Like, what is this space I'm creating, right? Like, suddenly it's not about me in the space, but like, what is the ideal space for a newborn, for this, for that? I mean, maybe it even starts with that first meal that first bit of food that you put into your, 6-month-old, where you're like, what's in this? Where did this come from? Like, there's a questioning, and that definitely started in when my kids were little. So, even before I got to California, while I was still in the Midwest. And if I'm going to give credit to what took me, I've always been connected to nature, but what gave me permission, I would say, because in the world, I'm not so sure that I was ever really given permission. You're, as a kid, allowed to go out and play, and you can have your imaginary friends, as everyone calls them, even though there are secrets on the wind. When you're a kid, people are like, yeah, that's fine. When you're an adult, they're like, go to work. So giving birth and entering the world of children allows you to go back to all of those skills you had when you were a child. And so obviously I wanted to be out in nature with them, and I enter into their world, and it's like, wait, that world still is there. It didn't go away. I just turned my back on it when I became an adult. But I also found Waldorf schools for my kids really young. Crazily enough, someone founded one in my old town of Wakanda, where I grew up. I grew up in Wakanda, and I'm going there one day and I see this sign. I'm going to visit my mom and I see this sign. I'm like, oh, look, there's a Waldorf school here. And what that led me to was something called biodynamic agriculture. And I bring that up because it's a, it was, created right after World War I. Definitely a part of the early organic movement. These are German farmers who are looking, they've just gone through a really bad thing. It is still really bad there. And they're asking questions about what are we doing to nature? What are we doing to the land? I'm not getting the right harvests. I'm not getting this. I'm not getting that. So this was created, and it's absolutely about organic farming, but it's also about understanding the land as a being. The land The land is a being. Just because trees are beings, just because they don't have a larynx to speak to us through mouth and words, they are always speaking, just like we're speaking to each other even when we're not. I liken it to there's always been an internet around us, and that's the internet of life or chi or energy, right? And every physical body interacts in the material world through the body they've been given. So a tree has a very different body than I do. So its action on the world is not going to be the same action as mine, but you can find a place to communicate anyway, even if you don't have the words or the and they don't have hands and vice versa. There is a way to communicate with them. And so through biodynamic farming and agriculture, there are meditative practices, there are preparations, there's also fertilizing and working with the seasons. You know where the moon is. Is it closer? Is it further to the earth? Things I'd never considered before, but I started doing that in my land, on my land in Spring Grove, where I lived for a bit. And then when we went to California, and we met the redwoods, and we lived in a literal, like, something as beautiful as Pandora, the world of Pandora. I think that's what they call it in Avatar. Just that beautiful every day when you look out your window, you can't not get to meet them. Like the most interesting people are actually the trees and these birds that you've never seen before, and these ferns and the earth. And like, but I've never seen earth like that before. The forest floor has a very different layer of dirt than, grass, sod grass that's been laid down like I had in the suburbs of Chicago, just bugs I'd never seen, things I'd never seen. And so 13 years of really, I told you my house was a shack, but the land, so and so I spent a lot of time getting to know the land and adding animals and bees, and we had goats to browse and manage the land, and we had chickens for fresh eggs. And all of that just came little by little on our property as I got to know it better. And of course, the trees were the dominant part because they're very dominant beings, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, the redwoods and like tell me, okay, tell the listeners a couple of the names of your trees, but in the other nature that you named. I always find that so interesting. You inspired me to name our trees that weren't named. We had some named, but then I inspired my neighbor too to name her like 200-year-old oak. I mean, it's huge. And I said, you need to give that tree a name. So
I love
can you share that though? Because I think people, you expand your senses to beyond just the five senses, wouldn't you
I
agree?
do. Yes, absolutely.
When you're
Yeah, you
there
have
in
to.
that immersed, you're immersed. I mean, you're up there. I only have the picture you shared with me when we met in person, but then I only have the picture of the
Exactly.
nothingness here, which is a very powerful picture. So this is the cover of the wildfire. And to know that there was so much more beauty there. You were like a speck in the middle of this great existence, right? Like you said, you're just this human, but amongst all of these giants. So can you share a little bit about how you named them or what their names were?
Yeah,
And
it's the naming process actually came sometimes from guests, sometimes from my husband. It's like different people, but I already mentioned Big Doug, or De Gaulle was his official name, because my husband, was like, no, I think his name is De Gaulle. And then we had this set of madrones that twisted up over our driveway, or over our sorry, our garage, which is actually the my husband is looking at what was the garage on the cover of the memoir. But there were, and you can kind of see them, they're very dead in that picture, but they kind of came up and over. They're more far to the left here. Yeah, they're at the very top up there. That's one of their thing, their branches. Anyways, there were these two madrones that twisted each other, and we called them the lovers because they looked like they were in tangoing, like a set of lovers constantly in one another's embrace. There were these two huge Doug firs that I didn't really get to know. I did get to know them, but they were more like the people in the cabin got to see them better. And we called them the Twin Towers, unfortunately, or not, it was just like what they were, the Twin Towers. And they were huge, 60-inch diameter trees. We also, who else did we name while we were there? We had, I mean, there were, oh, the Mary tree, a beautiful madrone, up in the top garden, who actually didn't burn in the fire but was killed anyway. And when we get to the talk on Maui and whatever, I'd like to mention that a little bit. Mary Tree, because she, we named her, she had this beautiful garden at her feet that had been planted by the previous tenant. And we named her because when we bought the house, the cabin came with a tenant named Mary. And she was a lovely woman. And so we named that tree after her because she helped us out a lot, both financially by paying rent, you know, because we kind of got in over our heads when we first moved there. And then also, she helped babysit the kids. My kids were 6 and 8. And once we got to know one another anyway. So we named a tree off of her, for example. And so there was another tree that had a burl on it, and some guests called it the butt tree. And then we just called it Baby's Got Back, you know, just like things like that also. And you're like, you are shaking your butt. So, you know, when it's, you know, so things like, you know, names like that. And then the fairy ring at the base of our land, which is alive, and why we called the whole land Big Trees, because these
Big
are the fairy
trees.
ring. Yeah, Big Trees is the name of the land. And these are
And
the only trees we saw.
you named it Big Trees.
We named it Big Trees. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
They are called the Guardians. It's a
The
set
Guardians.
of It's a huge fairy ring of redwoods, very old redwoods, and they survived the fire. They barely got burnt. It basically parted around them. They're very, very lucky. We're very, very lucky. But anyway, they're called the Guardians, and we've called them our guardians since the beginning because it just felt like they were guarding us from whatever is lower on the mountain, so to speak.
Yeah. And then in the book, there's so much more to that too, your naming and the connection and you know how they were speaking to me. But before we go into Maui, because this book is a handbook for
It's a
healing, it
handbook.
really is a handbook for healing after a tragedy like this. But get a little deeper into just the voices. You said, you know, the voice woke you up to the fire. You know, it did, whatever we want to call it, universe, spirit, God. It woke you, but then you started hearing the land talk to you, and I know, tend to me,
I mean,
it's
the
tend
land
to
had
me.
talked to me all the time. That's why I had goats. That's why I had, like, it was just sort of like, I need goats. Why do you need goats? To browse. Oh, right. You know, it was sort of like it was teaching me what it needed to thrive. You know, livestock is a big part of creating beautiful soil, for example, and managing a forest. I didn't know this, but I heard this in like this voice told me you need goats. You know, so that was always happening. But right after the fire, I mean, I got the message to wake up, same voice, you know, listen to your, you know, get up now, listen to that message. You know, I check it and it's like, I gotta go, right? I gotta go. This voice did this. And then it was, I couldn't connect. Part of that is because after a fire, you're not allowed up. You're not allowed to go to your land. You are very disconnected from it. But also the land itself was, if you want to say enfolded upon it, I mean, it burned. Like, I didn't burn. The land burned. Those beings burned. Animals died. It's quiet. It's a graveyard. Whether there's a human remains or not, it's the aftermath, and they are mourning also. They're dead and what was lost. And so there was a quietness, I want to say. Both in me, but also in the land, in the mountain, in the community. It's like, oh my God. So me being very type A, I wanted to get straight into, I'm just going to fix it. I'm going to go right back to where we were. And now we're going to have a beautiful house this time. And my friend Jackie is going to design it. And I, you know, hired my architect. I researched builders. I got my name into the, you know, whatever, on the highest list of debris removal. Like, I'm in the front of everything. I'm like, PG&E, come put on my power, this, that, and the other. I'm like, go, 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 go.
You get
And
shit done, like you say
I'm
in
going to
your
get,
book.
I do. I
You
get
get
shit done. And so I
it
have to get shit done. And my husband's
done.
like all gung ho about it. And then
You
at some point, and you know, and we're not even living on the land. We're now living far away from the land, but we get to start visiting it after around November, December. You know, you're really starting to visit it, and I'm spending more time on it. And I'm getting already then, if I'm honest, a sense that I'm not really listening though. Like, I get there, and I'm like, you're gonna, you know. And there's just so much pain and violation also with what's going on your land right after. But around February, we get our first bid from the builder. Like, the beginning of the house is designed. I give it to the builder and we get our first bid. And long story short, we are $700,000 underinsured to rebuild what we lost. And my husband had already planned on retiring, as we have a come to Jesus. And I go to the land so angry about all of this. Like now I'm finally angry. And I, cry, relief. I'm writing because I've started writing this journal, essentially, or these essays to heal. And I am just so furious. And I say, this isn't fair. And what are we going to do? And it's not right. And all I heard was, like, don't do anything. Like, be still. And it's like, what are you talking about? And then it's like, tend to me. And don't make it, don't build that house. Don't make a decision. Don't stop, stop everything. Just stop and be still. I was shocked and I changed my way after that. I changed my going forward after that. I would just go and tend the land. Like we need to restore, we need to restore the soil where the homes burned or, that it needs to be restored because it's toxic and it hasn't seen the light of day because there's been a house on it for since 75, and so researching soils and soil renewal and ground cover and mycelium and mushroom remediation and meeting the right people to do that. And suddenly all I cared about or all we focused on was what do we do for the land? What trees are still alive? Which trees are actually dead and you don't want to admit it, right? You don't want to admit they're dead, but they're dead and they can't stay. Like, and so just focusing on the land without knowing what we would do next, without making a decision about our shelter, because we had insurance. It was going to pay for our rental for 3 years. What was I rushing for? What was I rushing so fast for? And so then we were in dialogue again. And then it really was about sessions with the land, like, what do we do next? And it told us what to do for the land. And eventually, how to live on it came to be. Like, we saw a picture.
Well, this is such a big point to make in not just your tragic, the post tragedy of losing everything and you finally just giving in to just waiting and being, but the lesson with anything, right? That we, if we wait, there's an expansion or space, there's a space that's created. And I think we're in such a fast-paced society that everybody rushes to the next thing or to the getting and the doing and the getting and the doing. And then they find themselves not even really connected to what's really in their soul anymore, right? What the whole they end up getting things and they realize, well, I didn't want that anyway, but they didn't take the time to realize
It's
that
true.
they spend so much time getting and doing. So this is such a powerful lesson that you took the time, you gave it space, and then how far your whole life expanded, and you're
Yes, there was
just,
some, yeah. Well, because there was information I didn't know yet. Like that was the other thing. It's like, what else is going on in your life? Your children are gone. Do that suddenly changes the kind of shelter that you need, right? Because my young adult sons are in college and now in grad school and moving on, And we hadn't seen my parents, for example, since COVID started. So that summer, still not 100% sure what we were going to do. I saw my parents for the first time and it was like, wow, there's not a lot of time left there. Why do I live 2,000 miles away from them? Is there any way to be able to share their end of their life while still tending to this land? And I didn't know that though at first, right? I hadn't collected that information. I had no idea that I might be needed in that way.
This concludes part one of the wildfire episode. If you are intrigued by Nicole's story and a woman listener in the Chicagoland area, I have a unique opportunity for you to meet Nicole in person as she goes deeper into her journey after the fires, the lessons she learned, and how she let go of everything in order to gain the world. She'll share around an intimate four-course farm-to-table dinner on Friday, September 22nd in Woodstock, Illinois. Nicole's talk and Q&A will kick off a two-day integrated wellness experience led by me and other holistic practitioners, in which a small group of women will unplug, reset, and totally immerse in nature at the beautiful and extraordinary 80-acre Soulful Prairies. The space is extremely limited, but we do have some spots available. You can find the link to the events page in the show notes. Stay with us now as we continue on to part two of this episode.
And so that's where, eventually I saw that we would put tiny homes on wheels on the property. We bought one at first to see what we thought. And we liked it enough that we got one for each boy. Now we've got to figure out how to permit those. If not, if I can't permit them, I really at this point do not care. I'm allowed to live there at this moment in one. So, we'll do that. And then I have a condo in Chicago near my parents so that I can help take care of them, but also see them more often because it is precious these last years with your loved ones before they pass. And why I didn't want to be so far away. But I didn't know that right after the fire. I had to get back. And if I had failed to listen to the land and we did whatever it took, first of all, it would have cost even more because everything went up. Second of all, now everyone is financing in very high interest rates compared to then when we signed on, right? And then third of all, I would not be here. I would not have two homes because we would have gone back to over-mortgaging ourselves to have one.
So
So
the
the
silver,
land knew something I didn't.
the greater wisdom and the silver
Yes.
lining then in the whole process, looking hindsight, I mean, it's like you can be so grateful that you did stop to open up your senses and take a moment, like and breathe, or actually exhale, like
It was an exhale.
an exhale. You just
That's what it was.
exhale. And so that's beautiful. Now let's get back to this tragic. This is the tragic grieving that you were doing, and you were writing these essays. You were writing the anger, the emotion, all of the layers that you go through when you lose your belongings, all of your stuff, your
Oh,
animals. And I don't know that I want to get into this because it might trigger you, but your dear cat Sebastian, who you dedicate the book to. So, and I'm so sorry because when I first read it, I was crying. Animals are like family. So,
they are, and it's one of those things because I do write in there that essay about shame, my shame for not evacuating properly or better. I couldn't find the cat carrier and I didn't think of like shoving him into a pillow, but I had just a Beetle, a Volkswagen Bug convertible. That's all I had. And I had two dogs and he wouldn't get in the car with them. And I had, myself, and I actually didn't, because I didn't bring a lot of stuff. I just sort of lost my brains. And when we first started evacuating, my cat wasn't even home. Like he was an outdoor cat. And in Bonny Doon, in the wild, I mean, this is a wild place. The mountains of California are a wild place. If you let your cat go outside anyway, you've kind of already let go. You've already accepted they could be killed by a coyote or a mountain lion at any minute. Like you have lived with that for a while. So he's not there because he's out for the night. I don't know where he is. And he comes home just as we're leaving. And I can't get him in the car. He screeches. He jumps out of my hands. So I had put food and water outside for him because I didn't know where he was. I brought it in and said, I will come up tomorrow with a cat carrier. I'll be back tomorrow. There were blockades. I couldn't get up the next day, and so I called Animal Rescue, and they weren't allowed up either. Had I known that so many people stayed behind, I might have been able to have found someone up on the mountain through Facebook, maybe. That became clearer in a couple of days, but my house was already gone by then anyway. So, there wasn't. That's why they weren't allowed. That it was already gone. And then the same with my goat. I didn't,
Your goats.
I called the equine rescue at 2 a.m. as soon as I had cell phone coverage, and they were full rescuing horses and goats all over, right? By the time they could have gotten around to it, it was already gone. So and many animals did lose their lives, but they also did save a lot of animals too. They did the best they could. That's what I miss most is like days where I would be on my back porch and the goats would be in the meadow, and it was real. Those are very unique things to be able to do.
And they were your family. They're your family,
They were our babies.
They're your babies. All of these essays is their handbook. What and how can people learn and use this? Like, there's so much emotion that goes into this, and you have wisdom now. You've been through the fire and you've been through the loss. You're still going through stages of grief, and you said you might continue to go through stages of grief
I think
because it
so.
doesn't ever go away.
It doesn't.
What can you say to the people right now who are experiencing this in Maui? And there aren't, and it's not just like Maui. There obviously have been other
In
fires.
Canada, yeah, I was just reading they're evacuating in Canada. Rural Canada is being evacuated. Oregon, Northern California has several fires over in Klamath Mountains from some lightning strikes. Unfortunately, in a nutshell, what I would say to anyone who has been evacuated due to wildfire and you know that you've lost everything, because most likely you know this that quickly because you broke through some evacuation lines to find out what is about to happen next is not comfortable. But if you have insurance, you should file your claim immediately and discuss with your adjuster. They'll assign an adjuster. What is your loss of use on your policy? And loss of use is not everyone has it. Most people do have some form of it. And what it is your temporary housing. Whether you, at a minimum, you're going to need a year because making a change, anything bigger, like you need the time to think. So you need to find out what that policy is. Do you have it? Do you not? Regardless, you need to find shelter for the next year. It's not about sleeping on someone's floor for too long if you can help it. If you were uninsured, you need to kind of still find shelter. It might be in a person's house. It might be on someone's floor. And file any paperwork with the government that might be able to assist you with your alternative housing, and then rest. I mean, there's nothing else you can do. There's nothing you can do. You want to go back to your land, you want to tend to it. It's a toxic mess. If they do it like they did, I mean, Hawaii and is still America, and I know that this is how they do it in Oregon too. You're gonna get approval eventually to go back to your house, to see things. But lots of people have already stepped all over it. They have, the business of emergency management is not about respecting our privacy or our sovereignty or even the dead necessarily, including nature. They're going to step all over your house. They're going to go through your things. They're going to do it in the name of safety. And then, when you go, wear a mask, put on some hazmat clothes. Like, don't, I see some people in their shorts. It's like, this is really, and the state will guide you with that. They have like a, they're sending in hazmat crews to make sure nothing's going to blow up afterwards. Like, some things are high pressured and could blow up. They will diffuse all of that. They will identify trees that are a danger that could fall down on crews. Right, they're doing a bunch of stuff, and they'll have and then it's going to get cleaned up. And your job is to, as a homeowner or a landowner, is to make sure it gets cleaned up. But again, there's not much you can do other than sign the papers or choose, a person to clean it up.
Yeah, and this applies. Your book isn't just about wildfire. It's
No,
about natural disaster, losing like
natural disaster.
this is a handbook for anybody who's lost their house in a tornado or a hurricane or a tsunami or anything that's going to take their belongings, their pets, their life, their stuff. And I know that, due to time, we can't get into the stuff. There's so much in the book. So,
I know
but
there's so much
there's so
stuff.
much. And again, I just want to touch lightly on that, but the stuff, like do we need all
Lots of
our
stuff.
stuff? And that whole chapter about why do we need so much stuff and how you lost all your stuff, but then you kept getting more stuff. You're like, how did I get so much stuff?
Yeah. Well, and that's the side of it is if you know someone who has just lost everything, and actually, I do want to take a moment for those who haven't lost everything, but they have a house that lived, like you can see this. Fire is weird. We have one street in our neighborhood where it's checkerboard. Like half our neighborhood, everything is gone. Everything burned. The other one is checkerboard. That house made it, but this house didn't, right? Still, because of smoke damage and everything else, you're gonna be about a year out before you can go back to your house. It's just to live in it again. Maybe sooner you'll be able to go in and get your stuff and look around, but a lot of it will be smoke damaged. I know people that had to go all the way down to the studs and rebuild on the inside. If you're insured, you'll be guided. If you're not insured, it's a whole different story. Your community and you will have to work together, but still you are out of place. You are dislocated for at least a year, and you will have officials of all sorts coming and going For a while in the name of safety. You don't have a lot of property rights. And I would suggest that if you have, we lost a whole acre of trees that were taken down by the public utility because a line ran across our house, but they went 100 feet out of the whatever the easeway, right? There's an easeway that they get that is theirs. They went 100 feet out and took live trees that had survived the fire, because in the future we don't want them there, or because it, for emergency reasons we need to take them out. And that is really, really painful, and you have no rights as a property owner to try and take care of that. So that's another reason why you might want to go back to your land to fight for your trees, to fight for the rights. I see a lot of people talking about the banyan tree, whether or not it's alive. Even if a professional arborist says it's still alive today, it can easily die over the next year. I watched trees that were completely alive go dead because you don't realize how deep the fire burnt into their roots, for example. But maybe the banyan tree isn't, and some pu for public safety, they're not going to allow it to be open. Like a limb could fall on people, things are going to happen. And so your precious friend, your best friend, that might be your best friend, may be put behind fences, maybe put behind, maybe chopped up, right? Like you don't know what they're going to do, and the community should have a say and doesn't always have a say. And that's part of the anger.
The
And
anger,
so
yeah.
that's part of the anger. So the other thing I would recommend is you find a grief group where you get together. I mentioned that in the book, but I had a friend who lost everything, who was going through a yoga therapy training at the time, decided to host a therapy group for only total loss people, because it's very different when you lose everything.
Thing.
It's a very, very painful, precious, strange thing. And we met once a month, and we still do our fire sisters. And so I really recommend that when you're ready, you find that, because no one else is going to understand it, and you can bond together to maybe bring the community awareness that's needed.
And that brings me to that powerful chapter where you actually got me. Like, I was like pissed when I read it. It's about I was pissed at the people that you were talking about. I mean, and this is just my personal reaction, but the friendships, right? So
Oh,
you talk
yes.
about the friendships. I was like, what? I wanted to like just like shake the person. So that got my emotion. This book will move you in so many ways. But this whole thing with friends, now that's another topic that we could go down a rabbit hole in. But I wanted to say, like, the friendships change. People don't understand. They don't know. They not they'll, hopefully they'll like they'll never know.
Hopefully they'll never know.
But yet, what can people say? Because I've had somebody ask me who knows about your book and can't wait to receive it. She has a friend in Maui that lost everything, but fortunately, they do have another house on the mainland. But she said, everything's dark. Communication is dark as far as what I can say to her right now. What do I say to her? She said, I don't really even know what to say or if I should reach out. You on the other side of it. What did you want from your friends? What did you want from loved ones or friends who are saying, are you okay? What do you want them to say?
Well, I think it's, I think it would be hard. The one thing that is not helpful is at least you're alive. And in the case of Lahaina, there is truth to this. There is a tragedy of human loss that is unacceptable, to be honest. But you still shouldn't say that to somebody from that town. At least you're alive. Like, no, that's not a consolation prize at the moment when you've lost everything. You are homeless. Your photo albums are gone. Your life's memories are gone. Anything that you and your family have put down there is gone. Your animals are gone. Your trees are gone. Your neighbors are gone. Don't say at least you're alive, because it's not comfortable to be alive in that situation. Instead, I mean, I love you. Let me know if you need anything. I really appreciated DoorDash cards so that I didn't have to figure out meals. But really, it's just sort of like, I love you, and let me know if you need anything. And if they don't reach out, then you probably will need to go back again and say, I love you. Let me know if you need anything. But I have an example of a friend who, someone was reaching out, and they're like, since the fire, you don't return my texts. Not the thing to say. Not the thing to say, because guess what? Some people aren't even reading their phone. Some people are staring at a wall in shock. It is never about you. It's only, and they're not going to think about you. And so just, I love you, and let me know if you need anything.
Yeah, that's big. And that's big. That's enough. That's more than enough. The love, sending people love
Sending
and su
love,
support.
and telling them, yeah, and just saying, I love you, and let me know if you need anything. Because there's no, they, and don't, not like, you didn't text back in 2 days. Are you safe? Like, I get you have that desire to know if they're safe, but double check that. Is it really that you want to know that they're safe, or is it you want to know that you still matter to them? And right now, you might not matter at all.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a
And
whole
that's,
lot that you figured out along the way that there's a lot of things that don't really matter to you anymore, which is more powerful in your life because you kind of let go of the things that might have been just, stuff, extra
exactly.
stuff.
Stuff. And relationships are in that stuff for sure.
Yeah.
But
So,
do that.
Nicole, is there anything you want to add to the Maui su subject right now? Because then I want to get into maybe how you handled yourself, your being, your well-being, your sanity, how you nourished yourself.
Well, this kind of is sort of tied to that. I want to take just a brief moment with it,
Yeah.
and I want to, with regards to Maui, I spent some time on Twitter, and this happened after our fire too. And I don't want to go into a huge amount of the why did it happen, right?
Right,
But
right.
after something like this, you are looking for someone to blame. And there are lots and lots of stories about why these people being targeted, this, that, and the other. And I felt very much the same way our community did too. But to take a step back and realize, and in terms of nourishment, or it's not even nourishment, it's like, how do you keep from going crazy? How do you keep from,
Yeah.
because this anger can really, really fester inside of you, because everything, you don't need to add on top of it a huge, conspiratorial aspect to it, to take that in as anger on top of it, when just getting your insurance payout is going to be hard, right? So, and it isn't, it is absolutely set up in the favor of the other person, of the insurance companies, of the county, of this. It's not set up for you, and that's really, really painful. And accepting that takes time, and be patient with yourself. But the reality that I think everyone should understand is that I mentioned that before Paradise, when a fire came into California, you kind of knew they'd figure out how to hold the line, contain it, and save as much property, as possible. That's not how it's working now, because the fires are stronger, whatever is happening. But I think what really is going on is we're not really prepared. And understand that your government isn't prepared. They're not, they are going to fail a million times, and do not take it personally, even if it is, even if they're an sinister plotting. But really, what's happening is we are underprepared. We don't have enough tradespeople to build our homes in this age of eco disaster, after several generations of discouraging people in the trades. Not a great place to be in. We don't have enough public safety personnel. We don't know how to manage these things. And that the real bummer of it all, or truth of it all, is that we're not entirely prepared. We're, as a society, we're not prepared, and that hurts. And every time you take it personally, you are actually bringing in something that you don't need right now. So just remember that you are loved. Remember that we are all connected. We are all one. That most people want to help, even if their system hurts you, meaning like insurance, they don't want to pay out your money. You're going to have to play games to get it, but you will get it in the end. And it's not because you, it's not that, it's not, don't take it personally. Just enter the system and go for what you need.
And chip away, just
And just chip
chip
away.
away
And every time, and
consistency.
don't take it personally, because every time I took anything personally, I'm not saying you don't deny your anger, find ways and ritual to release your anger. You
Yeah,
have
and
every right to feel
what
anger.
were some for you? Can you share?
The one for me was, first of all, writing. I am a writer by nature, and so I started writing, and I am glad I wrote. I actually recommend that to anyone, even if you're not a writer, because when I was going back with the editor, there were things that I wrote that I didn't remember going through, because your trauma is going to make your brain foggy. So writing in the moment is going to enable you to be able to look back at things you will forget. The other piece of it was this ceremony called the stones. And that I have a whole chapter about that in the book,
Good.
but it's a really important thing to go and look up. But it was from a book, from by a woman who lost her child. So, grief is not unique to eco disaster. Grief is losing your loved one, losing your child, losing your mother. You know, there's all sorts of ways that we grieve together. And in her case, she had this ritual called talking to the stones, where you began with imagining digging a hole to plant a tree. But you're in
Right.
while you're digging the hole, stones are going to come up, and you take those stones and you label them on what's on your heart. So I had a stone called shame. I had a stone called guilt, loss of community. Like I did a whole thing. I spent a day on the land. This is after I realized I should be hanging out with the land more than anything else. And I collected these stones, and then I put them out and I talked to them every day. Like, so when I was feeling that absolute anger at PG&E for slaughtering my land and leaving me the way they did, I would grab the anger stone and hold it and just be like, I'm so angry. Or when I was feeling shame for evacuating with nothing, nothing but my computer and my kid, and my dogs. Dogs are easy. I was blessed. Get in the car, go. But you know, the shame and like the fact that I should have done that better just because I was alone, you know, and I would hold that rock. When I missed my friends, the friends that it was no longer working with or was hurt by them, I would hold the loss of community stones. And you talk to them, and as long as it takes, it could take forever. Maybe you never do anything else with them, but I came to the point where I could let them go. And then there's a whole ritual in letting them go. And in my case, I brought them to the ocean because I happen to live near the ocean. But letting go in a fire, in a body of water, something where you can't take it back, you know, that was the point. And then you are ready to plant a new tree for this new start of your life. You could do it as a visual because that's where you found the stones. Now you could put the tree in there and plant it and go forward, or you could actually really plant tree. I collected my stones all over my yard, and so I found that to be really, really helpful, and quite transformative.
Yeah, that is a powerful ritual. And you learned that from somebody who just lost a child in a book.
Yeah, she and I mentioned the author and the book because she has the whole thing.
Process.
Yeah, the whole process in there. I cannot remember it off the top of my head, but.
And that's really powerful because it's time that people have to take to actually confront, right? There, if you don't confront and you don't have a ritual or a ceremony, then it's in you, right? You
Just
got the anger.
remains.
Yeah, it
Yeah.
remains, and then you're battling with it because it's energy that you need to confront at some point, right?
Yeah.
But was there any self-care that you like to do for yourself? Was there anything that you did that helped you as far as, did you have a therapist? Did you have?
I didn't have a therapist, but I told you I went to this group therapy every
Yeah,
week
the grief
for a
therapy.
while, and then every month, the grief group. And I think that's key. If you don't have a therapist, I think actually a grief group is even better, especially because these are community tragedies. In the case of eco disaster, it's always a community that suffers. It's not just your house burnt down. That's very isolating, and that's a, you know, go to your therapist and do, you know, take that's still very traumatic. But when the whole world burns around you, you have other people you can be with, and so you heal together. And that's really powerful. The other thing I did was I got a weighted blanket, and I recommend that for anyone who's gone through trauma. Unfortunately, my cousin lives in Highland Park and was actually shot at in the Highland Park shootings.
Oh my gosh.
Right, what was that? 2 years? It was that 2022 that it happened, or 2021? Anyway, I had already had my experience, and he now was going through his experience. I said, get weighted blankets, and he did for his son and himself, I think. Anyway, a weighted blanket is everything. I got one almost immediately because someone suggested it, but for any trauma, but particularly these traumas where you're fleeing, you're still fleeing. Your body is still fleeing. Part of it is still processing it. So by weighting down while you sleep, I guess it actually helps that parasympathetic nervous system, that part of you that you're not in control of necessarily, you know, because it operates on its own. It hasn't shut down yet. You know, that fight or flight
Right, the
aspect.
fight or
So
flight.
the weighted blanket
It's
reminds
very
your body that it
ground.
can stop. It can stop fleeing. And so that's very helpful too.
It's good. It's grounding, to
Yes.
ground your energy and to keep you. And
And
I know
so
you
you're going
meant.
to take naps. You're going to feel really tired in the middle of the day. Put this blanket on you and just lay there.
And I wanted to get to that, to the rest part. And did you
Rest.
find, did you get ill, or did you have any physical side effects? Like, did you get sick more through this process? It's been
No,
3 years.
I did not. I definitely, for the longest time, couldn't sleep through the night, so my days were very blurry. We all talked about how we get up at 3 a.m. like all the time, which is not the time I woke up. I woke up at 1:30 to evacuate. So I don't know what the 3 a.m. thing was, but all of my fire friends were like, yeah, no, got up at 3. And then your brain is going because you realize you have all this stuff to do. So I was very foggy, but I didn't get sick. My husband didn't get sick. I happen to have already been retired on accident. I had had an accident in 2019 that broke my hip, which meant I had to retire from being a dance teacher. And then COVID hit. So I hadn't gone back to work. So I actually was able to hold this, and be able to take those naps. And then do the work that was needed for moving on with your life. But my husband worked full time the whole time.
But you guys held together your health and everything.
We
And
did.
that's good, especially with all the COVID stuff going on
I
and
know.
everything. Okay, you
On
held it
top of this
together.
pandemic, but I write about that in the book too. There's only so much trauma a person can handle. And I definitely was like, I'm only now processing the pandemic. Let's put it that way.
Exactly, right? For
Like
sure, you.
it's not over, but I'm putting it over there.
Yeah, it's fire first, and then at COVID, and right now in this moment, how are you feeling?
Both, like I said, there's a part of me that today I'm really missing Doug, Big Doug, for some reason. So I'm really, really missing that tree and sitting in the hot tub under, like, there's just parts of that that I'm really missing. I think because I've empty nested without a nest, like I call it, and now my nests have no real visible elements of my children. I'm processing that now too. So it's just sort of like there were these other big events that happened during that fire time that now that the fire is settled, like I have just a few more things to do with insurance. It's very simple. The all of the traumatic and annoying things are over, and I have shelter and I know what's going on. Now it's sort of like, what do I do? So I'm feeling like excited, and I'm also like, whoa, what's next? What do I do? And so I don't have children in the house anymore, but I also don't have their rooms to go to sit and be in. There's no trace of them really. I forced them. They had apartments at school, so a lot of their stuff that they wanted in the now was there. Their baby things, those things are all gone. But the things that they cared about, they still had. They had more stuff than I did after the fire, actually. So I forced them to leave me some things. Like my one son, I made him give me all of his Christmas sweaters since he's here at Christmas anyway, to put in a closet so I can open and see evidence of him. It's a very strange thing. But that's where I'm at now, is now I'm facing that I'm empty nested. And I have been the whole time, but since the fire. But now it's
Now
like,
you're
okay,
processing. Now
I'm
you're
noticing
processing.
this, and what is next? And then the fact that I was unemployed before the fire was good for that, but now that I don't have the 20 some hours a week of firework, which is really what it is until you've settled everything that is, having stuff, including land, is a big bureaucratic issue. There's bureaucracy behind it. So unless you were a renter, without renter's insurance, which I am really sorry for all of those people in that situation, anyone else has got got to do this. Well, that's gone now. What do I do now? What do I do? I'm a novelist, but I also there's a society to be in, and what do I do next? So I'm open, I'm excited, and also like, wow, what is it? What's around the corner? I gotta go
When,
look. I'm ready to go
yeah,
look.
yeah, that's an expand and a whole vast expansion of field of infinite possibilities for you and all that you can
Absolutely.
teach and share in your
And
writing.
share, exactly.
And so in your afterword, you talk about how you decided not to rebuild, that you do your tiny house living. I want to tell people, I did tell them in the intro, but and all of this will be in the show notes, by the way, but that you have your tiny house living on Substack. Like, people can follow your experience in tiny house living. And I didn't know what a tiny house was until you started posting it on Facebook. I'm like, this is the coolest thing that ever
They're
existed.
adorable. They're really great, especially if you have no stuff. If after a fire, to just really think about what is the land asking us to do, and is a foundationed home the only answer, or can you have a home on wheels? You don't have any stuff anymore. They're beautiful. They're clean. They're so easy to clean, and they're very, very ecologically sound.
Friendly. Yeah, sound.
Friendly.
Good.
Yeah, they're
Yeah.
sound. Yeah. So there,
And
it's
that,
a whole other world that I'm exploring. Yeah,
and you call it the bedroom with the bees.
Yes, it's a bedroom with the bees because I am beekeeper or bee guardian, actually, is what I call myself.
The bee
And
guardian. Oh, I love
the
that.
bees, one of my hives survived the fire and is still going strong. And so we've sort of like worked
Wow.
around them. And so that's why we call it a bedroom with the bees. Yeah. And that's the name of my Substack. And that's the name basically of the tiny houses. We call it the big tiny because it's the biggest of the tinies, but it's really a bedroom with the bees.
The big tiny. All right. So listeners can keep up with you and your experience there. But I want to just briefly touch on all the other wonderful. Your writing spans from just the AI and the technology. You have this trilogy coming, and you want to just share a little bit about your first book was E-Human Deception or
Dawn.
Dawn? Dawn, E-Human
E-Human Dawn.
Dawn. E-Human Dawn, where you're, and it's strange to think like that was 10 years ago, right? And
It was released in 2012.
it's AI. It's about all of this great stuff that we are now living. Like, it's prophetic.
But they say that about sci-fi writers,
You're a prophet,
Well,
Nicole.
and I certainly parts of it I'm like, oh, it's so sad that this is going to happen and is happening, and there but there are beautiful things about to happen too, and that's definitely what the E-Human trilogy spans, but it started with E-Human Dawn and then E-Human Deception, and then I thought I would finish it and I got lost. I went into Egypt. I have a trilogy about
Yeah.
ancient Egypt and
Great.
the Great Egyptian Revolt of 200 BCE. I also wrote a romance novel in there. Then my house burnt down, and
Yes.
and I've been writing essays the whole time on Medium and on my website, my blog, and that is what you were talking about. I write about all sorts of stuff there. Whereas my Substack, I only put things about tiny home living and the recovery of the wildfire, just for people that are interested in that. But my website has everything I've ever written, essay-wise. But regardless, I'm finally going to finish the E-Human trilogy, and as a result, I'm re-releasing the first two books and rebranding the whole thing. E-Human Dawn is being re-released. It's rewritten, new scenes, but if you've never read it, it'll be new to you. It's being released as Bootstrap is the name of the novel. It's coming
Bootstrap.
out on Bootstrap. It's coming out on October 1st, and the information will be on my website. E-Human Deception will be re-released as called Quantium, and that will be on in January of 2024. And then the last one, Reboot, it had never been written before, brand new book. Finishing the trilogy will come in April of 2024. So I'm just
Oh,
going to re-release them a couple months
get
apart.
them.
People can do what they want. It'll end up on Audible eventually. But right now, it'll just be book, paperback, and Kindle.
Right. And so they can find you on your website, Nicole Salick Anderson. And then I've also listed in the show notes where they can follow you and Salick Anderson
Yep,
and
on all the
all the
things.
platforms and all of
All
the
the
things,
platforms. Yep.
all the digital
All
distractors
the
in our
digital
world.
distractors. Exactly,
Yes,
I know.
exactly. That we get lost in. So we
Yep.
need to take the time. But I want to encourage all of the listeners to go out into your land, however big it is, even if it's just a condominium patio, to name your plants in the house if you can, but name your nature. I want to
Yeah.
just,
Well, I was going to say, I have a condo, I said, in Chicago with no land because we don't want a lot of land, but there is a front yard. And in it is a big locust tree. The whole streets, it's a very Chicago-y thing that there are these locust trees. And I've named him Loki. So I'm really,
Loki.
really clever with my names, but Loki is out front. And I chat with Loki every day in my sunroom and ask how he's doing and what's going on out there. So
Why don't you get your
that's.
base out and sit out on the sidewalk and you might make some tips?
I have not repurchased. I have not played the bass since that night
Oh,
3 years ago. It would be this
okay.
evening, 3 years ago. Yeah.
Wow.
I will probably get the courage to replace it. We'll see if I, because I had it
Yeah,
burned in the fire and I
it
still
burned
haven't
in the
replaced
fire.
it.
Okay.
And I will see because I haven't played in 3
Yeah.
years.
Oh my gosh. Well, maybe today, as a ritual, you can go to a music store in the city and you can maybe strum a little on their
Yeah, that's a
instrument.
really good idea. Oh my God, now you're gonna make me cry.
No, I'm
Because I
crying
am
because I'm
missing
thinking,
him.
no.
I'm missing him
Yeah.
a lot today. This was the
Oh, I'm
last time
sorry.
I saw him alive.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Good
Oh,
grief.
a moment there to breathe, which is very important. We must all all sobbed
Yeah.
to breathe. But I just want to say, Nicole, you inspire with such authenticity. Your writing
Yeah.
is like the collective consciousness of all of us, that you have this great way to articulate in the feelings, the emotions, all the things that humans and humanity want. We all want to say, yes, that's me. That's me too. That's me. And I think anybody who reads this book will find that they're connected to you in so many ways,
I
through
hope so.
the emotion, through just, the way our society works with insurance and the analytical and the emotional, the thinking and the
Right.
feeling. So all people, they say when you write a book, because I've been trying for years, but your audience, know your reader, who is
Yeah.
your avatar. But this avatar that you're writing for in Wildfire, it is everybody. And I wanted to say that with all my being, is that something in this book will touch every single human. It is a really big book, and it's a book that I hope to spread. And I'm just this little podcaster in my fourth episode, but I really hope that we can share this and you can share this with so many humans, and the powerful messages that are in it. So big things for you and all that you can teach and share,
Thank you very much.
with this tragic experience. There is the silver lining, and I know that sounds so cliche, right? There is a silver lining, and there is the divine power behind it that we might not
Yes.
even know or see yet.
Yep.
So
No, you can't see it at first, but it's
no,
there.
you can't. And so I want to thank you so much for being here. I am so grateful that you took the time to share and to be on the podcast. And I want to just send you light and love and your continued healing experience. So thanks
Well,
for
thank you
being
very
here.
much, and thank you for taking the time to read it and to share it. It means a lot to me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And if you feel inclined to nourish this podcast, please leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. And be sure to go to www.joannepavin.com/events to sign up for the intimate farm-to-table dinner with Nicole Zalek Anderson, author of Wildfire, at the extraordinary Soulful Prairies in Woodstock, Illinois, on September 22nd. Thank you, and look forward to meeting you there.